Morning, I want to talk to you about the prophet Daniel. I've entitled our sermon, Daniel, Prophet for the End. I'd like to start reading this morning in Matthew chapter 24. Few people today study the prophet Daniel like they should. He's much overlooked by many of the churches today. Few people realize that he is the only prophet that Jesus actually told us we needed to read. Jesus quoted from a number of the prophets, but he specifically told us that at the end of time, things that were described by the prophet Daniel were going to come to pass, and we should beware when we saw those things. It's amazing today how the book of Daniel is overlooked. In fact, I'll have to tell you that the book of Daniel does more for me to prove that there is a God in heaven than anything else in the Bible. Because when I know that I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and none of you do either, and so when we see people who can predict the future 1,000 years in advance, like the prophet Daniel did, and actually when we come down to the final events of Earth's history, he will have predicted them about 26 or 2,700 years in advance. When we see things like that happen, we know that there has to be some kind of supernatural intelligence out there that gives the wisdom to these people to do this, because no one can do it. We know that the prophet Daniel lived in about 620 BC, back in that area, 620 years before Jesus was born. The prophet Daniel, as we're going to study in the coming weeks, predicted that the empire that he lived in, which was the most glorious one on earth, probably that ever was, the kingdom of Babylon, he predicted that it would be destroyed by another kingdom. And that's not too stunning a prediction to us. But then he predicted that that kingdom that destroyed Babylon would be destroyed by yet another kingdom in the future. And then he predicted that that third kingdom would be destroyed by a fourth kingdom. And if you and I were giving that prophecy, we'd have probably said the fourth would be destroyed by the fifth, and the sixth would destroy the fifth, and we could keep going. But when he got to the fourth one, he told us that God told him that that kingdom would divide into 10 nations. And we know that the history has followed the prophetic track of Daniel. He lived in the time of Babylon. It was overthrown by the Medes and Persians. They were later overthrown by Alexander the Great, the first great Greek conqueror. And the great Greek Empire was conquered by the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire divided into the 10 nations of Europe: England, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Germany, and so on. It divided into exactly 10. So he told them, and that occurred, you know, beginning around 500 AD. So he's back there in 620 BC, so about 1,100 years before the breakup of the Roman Empire into the 10 kingdoms that it broke into. He told us that was exactly what was going to happen. And Daniel says that it was of no goodness that was in him, but that the God that he served, the creator of the heavens and the earth, told him that these things would come to pass. And he predicted many other things. His prophecies have great details we're going to see today, because we're going to get into the first one that deals with the history of the world. It's very interesting. In Matthew chapter 24, we're just going to read a few words here this morning, the words of Jesus. Chapter 24 and verse 1, it says, "And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world? So Jesus was leaving the temple one day, and his disciples were there, and they said to him, Lord, look at the magnificence of this place. Beautiful white stone. The boulders were cemented together with pure gold, a structure you couldn't even imagine. And the Jews believed it would stand forever, because in the back of that temple was where Almighty Yahweh's glory dwelt, and they thought it would never be destroyed, and they looked for the Messiah to come and everything to go on forever. So they told Jesus that, look at this temple, look at the magnificence of it. And Jesus said to them, the day is coming when there won't be one rock left on top of another here. Huge stones, you can't even imagine the size of them. And that shocked the disciples so badly, they didn't say anything to him right then because it stunned them. But when they got out to the Mount of Olives where it was private and they were just with him, they said, when is this going to happen? You know, it shattered their whole belief of what was going to happen to the Jewish nation and what was to come in the future. So Jesus began to tell them, as no one else could, about what was going to happen at the end of the world. He begins in verse 4, it says, Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. So if the first thing someone tells you is be careful that you're not deceived, it tells you that there's going to be a lot of deception on that point. Lots of deception. He said, take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. He didn't say they would say, I'm Jesus Christ, but they would say that I am the Christ or the Christos, the anointed one. So there'd be lots of people come and claim to be the Savior. Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginnings of sorrows. All those things are with us today, and Jesus said they would be the beginning of sorrows. Back in Jesus' day, earthquakes were unheard of, and today they're everywhere around us at unbelievable rapidity, the way they're happening. Verse 9, he told them, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Christians are not yet hated by all nations for Jesus' name's sake, but it says that that day is coming. They won't hate them just because they're a Christian, but they'll hate them because they're a Christian that insists on practicing the complete Word of God. Verse 10, Jesus said, then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. I see that every day in our world, the love of many is waxing cold. There's very little love out there. The expressions on people's faces as you see them and things, you know, there's just a lot of hostility, and people's tempers are very short. It's amazing. Verse 14 says, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So Jesus said the gospel or the truth would be preached to all nations, and when that occurred, the end would come. Christianity today has been preached to just about all the nations. There's just a few places that it hasn't gotten real well. Some missionaries have basically made it to everywhere, but there are still a few people to hear, but we're getting near the end. But now notice what Jesus says in verse 15. He says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, or the abomination that's going to make desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. And then Jesus said, let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And we're not going to read all of this chapter 24 this morning, but he tells us that like the lightning comes from the east to the west, that will be his coming. Jesus is speaking about the coming, and he says, you're going to see, the gospel is going to go to the whole world. Then you're going to see what Daniel predicted. It's going to occur. And he says, when that occurs, you've got to flee, because if you don't, you'll be taken and killed and destroyed. So Jesus clearly here believed in the prophet Daniel, that he was a true prophet, because he quoted from him. And he told us that when we saw the events that Daniel predicted come to pass, we needed to pay special attention to them so that we weren't caught up in what was going to happen at the end. Let's turn now back to the book of Daniel. Daniel was a young Jewish person, living a little before the year 600 BC. Around 618 BC, the Jews had been in apostasy for a long time. They had been brought out of the land of Egypt. God had blessed them much, but he kept telling them, if you don't straighten up and do what's right, I'm going to destroy your nation, and I'm going to make you servants in another nation until I've gotten rid of all the evil people amongst you, and then eventually I'll let you come back to your homeland. And around 618 BC, that prophecy that God had given them was fulfilled. It must have been something to stand on the wall of Jerusalem and watch the Babylonian armies as they rolled up outside the city. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, besieged the city of Jerusalem, and they overcame the defenses of the city of Jerusalem. They slaughtered many, many people in the city of Jerusalem. And that begins the story of the book of Daniel for us. Daniel was a young man, probably around 20 years old. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So this records the destruction of Jerusalem, and King Nebuchadnezzar was a wise king from Babylon. And each time he conquered a country, he took some of their smartest children, and he took them back to Babylon with him, 15, 20-year-old young men, and he put them in his schools, and he taught them the language of Chaldea, and he made them basically ambassadors for him. He needed people to send back to these countries so that they could speak the language and so he could understand what was going on there in these things. So he took some of their best children and he always brought them down and put them in school. And Daniel and four of his friends were taken there to Babylon. And the king put them in his school and he appointed them a portion of his food to eat, it says, from his table. They didn't eat in his palace at his table, but they ate the same food that Nebuchadnezzar ate himself because he wanted to take good care of these people. But it says Daniel and his friends would not eat that food because it was unclean meats and it was offered to idols and other things, and they asked if they could have just vegetables and water, pulse it's called in the Bible. And the man who was taking care of them said to them, I'm afraid to give you that to eat because if you don't look as good as these other kids that are eating the king's meat and drinking his wine, then the king will probably cut my head off. So Daniel and his friends said to him, well, just try us for 10 days. Give us what we want to eat for 10 days. And at the end of that 10 days, you look at us and the people that are eating what the king eats, and you tell us who looks better, and then you make the decision, sir. So it says the man said that was a fair test. So he gave them what they wanted for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, it says they looked much better and healthier than the others. So he gave them what they wanted. The Bible tells us also in chapter 1 that at the end of their 3 years of schooling, they were brought before the king, and the king spoke to all of them himself, and he asked them all questions and talked to them. And it says that the king decided that these men were 10 times smarter than any of the others he had brought down with him, because God blessed Daniel and his friends in their decision of what they wanted to do. So Daniel and his friends were added to the king's, you could call it the president's cabinet, you know. Our president has a group of people who advise him on things, and Nebuchadnezzar was the same way. And all the kings had these groups of men back in those days. We call them the wise men. They call them the Chaldeans, the astrologers. They were, some of them looked at the stars to get omens to tell the king when he should go to war and what would be good to do and whatnot. But Daniel and his men were added to this group of people, but you can imagine they were the underlings. Be kind of like today if you became a new senator to go back to Washington, D.C., you know, you would be a rookie, so you're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole. But it was God's plan to put Daniel and his men in prominent positions there in the country of Babylon so that they could help take care of their brothers who were there as slaves and servants in that kingdom. And so we want to read the story of chapter 2 this morning. King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. It's actually a very amazing story. He was laying on his bed at night, it says, and he had this dream. We'll begin to read about it in chapter 2 of Daniel. Chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep brake from him." So he had this dream, and it says the king could not sleep after he had this dream. Verse 2 says, "The king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king." Probably it was the middle of the night, and Nebuchadnezzar commanded them to get his wise men down here. He said, "I've got to know what this dream was." They believed that every time they had a dream, it had some meaning to it. There are people that believe that today. And sometimes God does give people dreams, but we know that not every dream has a meaning to it. But Nebuchadnezzar brought his wise men all down there. Now we know lots of times Nebuchadnezzar and the other kings had had dreams, but normally they would bring their wise men in and they would tell them what they dreamed. "I dreamed this and this happened and that happened." And the wise men, they were really a bunch of cunning, crafty characters. They could always come up with a meaning for the dreams that the people had, some kind of meaning. And they kept their jobs and kept their high lifestyle and these things, but it was God's purpose to show King Nebuchadnezzar where true knowledge came from. So he gave this king a dream. The king called all his men down there. And in verse 3 it says, "The king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac," that's their language, "O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation." They said, "No problem, king. Tell us what you dreamed, and we'll tell you what it means." Verse 5, "The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, The thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill." So the king said to them, they said, "Tell us what you dream, king. No problem, we'll tell you what it means." And the king had never had this problem before. See, it was a miracle that you could have a dream and it could make such an effect on your mind, but then you couldn't remember it a little later. So here he stood in front of these men that he believed talked to the gods. They could look at the stars and tell them what was going on. They would cut animals in two and they'd slice their liver in two and look at the designs in the liver and tell you all these things for the future. That's how their prophecy was done. And he was looking at all these men, waiting for them to tell him, and they said, "We don't know what you dreamed, king." And he was infuriated. He said, tell me what I dreamed and tell me what it means or I'm going to destroy you." He realized then at this moment, there's something wrong with these guys. I've been taking care of them for years and I've told them all these dreams and they've told me what they meant, but this morning they can't even tell me what I dreamed. Verse 6, he offered the money. He says, "But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore show me the dream and the interpretation thereof." They answered again and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it." The king answered and said, "I know of certainty that you would gain time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, when the time be changed," or at a future time. He knew they were trying to get time out of him, and he realized, you know what, if these guys don't know what I dreamed, how would they know what it meant? He probably thought of all those other dreams he had told them and all the things they told him and realized, you know, what a farce I've been put through here. He said, "Therefore tell me the dream," the end of verse 9, "therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof." He said, "Tell me what I dreamed, and then I'll know when you tell me the interpretation that it's really right." Verse 10, it says, "The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Furthermore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean." They said, "There's nobody on earth, king, that can do what you want. And furthermore, you're being unreasonable because no one's ever asked such a thing of any of us wise men, Chaldeans. It's never happened." Verse 11, they said, "It is a rare thing that the king requireth, and then there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh." They said, there's nobody that can tell you what you want to know except the gods. Whoever gave you the dream could tell you what it meant, but there's no man that can do it. Verse 12 says, for this cause the king was angry and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. So Daniel wasn't there on that morning, but after the king said, kill them all, I want you to clean house, get rid of them, we're going to start this all over, they went to find Daniel, because he was a junior wise man, you could say. Verse 14, it says, then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Daniel hadn't even heard about it. Probably happened in the middle of the night, 8 o'clock in the morning, they're there to kill everybody. And Daniel said, what's going on? So the man told him, well, this has happened. So verse 16, it says, then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So Daniel went in before the king, and for whatever reason, God caused the king to decide. He probably remembered, that's Daniel. That's the kid that was 10 times smarter than anybody else. And the king probably thought, you know, what have I got to lose to give this young man one day? I'm about to kill my whole cabinet. I'm going to have to start all over with new advisors. So God worked on the king's mind, and the king apparently told Daniel he'd give him one day. Verse 19, of course we already read, Daniel went home and he prayed with his friends to God that God would tell them what this was. Verse 19, it says, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. So Daniel prayed, and he praised God that God had told him what he needed to know. Verse 24, now you'd kind of be, if Daniel hadn't had a true vision and he didn't really know, do you think he'd want to go in there before the king and try to tell him something? Obviously, Daniel was given the truth. 24, it says, therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. Just imagine the stage that had been set here. All the great wise men of Babylon had told the king, there is no man on earth that can tell you what you want to know. And now here stands one of the captives of Judah, one of the young men, and he tells the king, I know what you dreamed. God has given it to me, and I'm going to tell you. So those men had actually set the stage to push Daniel to the top of the empire of Babylon. 26, it says, the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? The king said, can you really do it, Daniel? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. So Daniel told the king, the God of heaven has told you what's going to happen in the latter days. That means way on down in time, the last days. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have, more than any other living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. So he told the king, you were laying on your bed and you were thinking about what was going to come to pass hereafter. Just like any man that has a son would wonder if his son's going to be able to take care of things after he died. And Nebuchadnezzar was lying on his bed that night and he was thinking about what was going to happen to the kingdom after he was gone. And so he had this dream. Now Daniel's going to begin to tell him what the dream is. In verse 31 he says, thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. It means awesome, magnificent. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So just imagine this dream. You can see why it made a great impact upon the king. He was dreaming there and he saw this huge image. And to them, they loved images. So this was a great image. It was an excellent image. Huge. And the form thereof was awesome, it says. And the king was lying there in his bed and he saw it. And the head was all gold. And then when he got down to the shoulders, it turned to silver. Then when he got down to about the waist, it turned into brass. And then when he got down to the legs, it was iron, but when he looked down to the feet of it, it was iron and clay mixed together. And then as he was looking at this image, something caught his eye out of the corner. Way over here, he saw this rock coming through space, cut out of a mountain without hands, and he saw it till it smashed into the feet of the image, and it ground the image to powder, because Daniel says that it was blown away like the chaff of the summer threshing floor. Chaff is the little husk that's on wheat, and the combine breaks it apart and then the wind blows it away. It's very light. And so he saw this great image reduced to dust, and then a great wind blew it all away. You couldn't even see any of the image left. And then he saw that rock that had hit it just began to expand, and it says it filled the whole earth. That would be a pretty magnificent dream. If you had a dream like that, that would be a dream like nothing you ever had. And so it made this great impact on the king's mind, and he thought, I got to know what that dream means. So he brought his men in, and they couldn't tell him, and now, 24 hours later or so, stands a young man, and he's just told the king, and I'm sure as the king was being told what the dream meant, he was thinking, yes, that's right, it was like that, I did see that. So that told him that this was true. He had dreamed it in his mind, and now another man had had the same dream. Now in verse 36, Daniel says, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thy hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar loved to hear that. Daniel told him, the God of heaven has given you this great kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar thought he had made it all himself. See, the king, city of Babylon, I was going to talk a little bit about it, and I left it out, so I'll mention it now. It was a great city. It had 60 miles of walls. It was 15 miles on each side, a perfect square. Some people believe that the walls were as high as 200 feet high and 80 feet thick, and they had hauled all this in there and built this city. It was a fortress. And the Euphrates River went right through the center of the city. And along the Euphrates River, they had also built that huge wall on each side, and they had gates so they could go right out there and get their water out of the river. And they had plenty of room to grow food in there. when they came to besiege the city, it says they actually threw food over the walls at their armies that were coming to mock them and told them, "You're never going to take us." It was a magnificent city. Contained one of the seven wonders of the world, the Hanging Gardens. One of the king's wives was from up towards Iran, or what's called Persia in that day, and she hated the plains out there because Babylon set out there in the middle of what's Iraq today, and it was just sand and flat wasteland. So he built these huge gardens in the city there for her to look like a mountain, and it was one of the seven wonders of the world. It was a great city. Probably nothing has ever rivaled it to this day for the glory and beauty that it had there. They have the main gate of it called the Ishtar Gate. It was all built out of this real beautiful blue stone, and it's been, they actually have the rock. They've rebuilt it in Europe and have the actual rock there that was on this city. It was a fantastic city, and God told Daniel, "You tell this man I gave him the power to do what he did, and he's built this great city, and he's got a kingdom that's greater than any other, and this head of gold represents him." But the king's glory was short-lived, because Daniel tells him in 39, he says, "After thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and a third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth." So now, if Daniel was a false prophet and he was just trying to get in good with the king, he could have just stopped there with the first part. "You're the head of gold, king." But Daniel had a true message to deliver from the God of heaven, and he told them, "After you, another kingdom's coming. It will be inferior to you, just like silver is not as great a metal as gold is. And a third kingdom will bear rule over all the earth," or over all the then known world. God kept America and some of these other continents over here so that he'd have a place to spread the people out to later on in history as the persecution of the church became so bad. But in that day, these men bear rule over the better part of the known world. Obviously, they didn't get to China and some of those places, but we're dealing in this day and age with God's chosen people there in the Mediterranean region. Then in verse 40, he told them, "In the fourth kingdom," so he said there's going to be a fourth one after the third, "the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken." Now I'm going to stop there and we're going to talk about it a second. So he told them that fourth empire, which we've already traced down, you can get your encyclopedia out this afternoon and do it yourself again. Babylon was first. The Medes and Persians conquered Babylon. The Greeks conquered the Medes and Persians. And the Romans conquered the Greeks. The fourth empire was the Romans. And they even call Rome the Iron Monarchy because they were so strong and so tough. The Roman legions were awesome fighting forces. But it says at the end of this kingdom, as it got down into the feet, that it would be partly strong and partly broken. That's because Rome got so big, it wasn't conquered by another kingdom, it just fell apart. They built good highways, but it's recorded that it would take 6 months for them to march their soldiers at a hard pace, which they marched them at every day with a big pack on their back to get from one side of the Roman Empire to the other. And so while they were over on this side of the empire taking care of insurrection and putting down rebellion, on the other side it would break out again. And they couldn't hold the kingdom together, and finally the kingdom was divided amongst the 10, they call them the barbarian tribes, that were within the country of Rome. Now we have to look up to Rome proper for this, because they're not talking about, they bear rule over Egypt and other countries, and it's not talking about some of them, it's talking about how Rome or Europe up there divided into the 10. Then in verse 43, now if you didn't have truth from God, you know, the more you stick your neck out on the line, the more specific you make your prophecy, the more likely you're going to be proved wrong if you're just making your own conjecture. But Daniel gets even more explicit. In 43 he says, "Whereas thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." So Daniel told him in the last days of this huge fourth kingdom, They'll mix themselves with the seed of men, but they'll never cleave together. And if we could go to Europe today, I have a picture of it, but I don't have it here this morning. They have a castle over there where they have the family tree of all of Europe. And after all those countries divided into the 10 nations of Europe, as time went on, they kept trying to put the kingdom back together, and they intermarried their children. The king of this country would give his son to be married to the daughter of the king of that country. And they thought, if we do this, we'll have peace, because he won't want to come after my country because where our children are married. So Daniel told them that out of this fourth empire, they would try to put the kingdom back together by intermarrying. He told them this in 623. They hadn't even thought of the fourth empire. We're in the days of Babylon. The Medes and Persians weren't going to come and conquer Babylon for a while, and then the Greeks had to conquer them, and then the Romans had to conquer them, and he told them way down there in that fourth empire, they're going to do these things. Then in verse 44, he told them, in the days of these kings, in other words, when England and France and Germany, these countries, when they're still there, these kingdoms, in the days of these kingdoms shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel told the king, it's not going to change. This is what's going to happen. Verse 46, it says, then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation, or incense, and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And this is recorded. The tomb of Daniel is still guarded to this day over there in the Middle East. Daniel was a man who lived. There are only a couple other men in the Bible way back in the Old Testament whose names were Daniel, one of David's sons, and someone else. Jesus told us that what this man had to say would come to pass. Now Nebuchadnezzar took it on faith because he saw the dream, and Daniel saw the dream, and Daniel told him it. But you and I live in the day when we can look back upon it. Can you imagine Daniel being able to tell the king, you've got the first great world empire at this time, but yours is going to be overthrown by another, and then another will overthrow that one, and then the fourth one will be strong like iron, a superpower, but it'll divide into 10, and they'll try to mingle themselves with the seed of men to put them back together, but in their days, the God of heaven will set up his kingdom here on earth, and he'll take over everything. That would be the equivalent if someone came forward today and told us that the United States is going to be conquered, and then the country that conquers the United States will be conquered by another, and then that country will be conquered by another, and that country will be a superpower, and then that country will divide up into 10 different nations. And they'll try to all get together by intermarrying with one another. But God's going to come and set up his kingdom. If someone told us that today, we probably wouldn't believe it. Well, if we told us that today, we'd know it went against Bible prophecy, so we would know that it could not be that way. But in Daniel's day, Daniel told the king this in 600 B.C. approximately. And 400 A.D. plus is when they begin to divide into the 10. Exactly 4 kingdoms later, they divided into the 10. And then they went through trying to intermarry and trying to put the kingdom back together. But God said it would never happen again. And right at the end, we know there's going to be another effort made. But Daniel is a true prophet. History proves that Daniel is a true prophet. No man could have this information if there was not a God in the sky who told him these things. And Daniel has this information. And in the later chapters of Daniel, he gives us prophecies that are even more specific to tell us the things that are going to happen. This was the king. He was a pagan. He was just given a history of the world. In the next chapter, we're going to study God gives Daniel a dream, and he begins to tell him the histories of the world and what will happen with religious persecution and what's going to happen. And much of that's already happened. And as we study that, we'll see that God begins to, it's like taking a microscope and continuing to zoom in. Prophecy gets more and more specific. And these things are given us so that in our godless age today, we can know that there is a God up in heaven that has told us these things and that he's going to bring these things to pass. And these things are given to strengthen our faith so that we can know that he's up there and so we can prepare to meet him. Daniel is truly the prophet of the end. And as we study in coming weeks and go through these things, we're going to clearly see our path illuminated and what we need to do to have a home in heaven and be found faithful when the Lord appears.